Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What the Pel is up, Pelicans fans? My name is Elliot Clough, otherwise known as E-Dog on Twitter. Thank you, EZP. Cheers to you as well. And this is Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans podcast via the Believe Podcast Network. Very excited for today's podcast. Following yesterday's awesome podcast, if you missed it, we broke down five moments in Pelican/Hornets history that could be used as a documentary. Some really fun stuff, some really engaging stuff with you, Pelicans Twitter, and just you, the listener in general, from the Pelicans fanhood. So if you missed it, you can go check it out once this one is over. Some excellent, excellent stuff. And we talk about it a little bit today. And who's the other part of the we, you might ask? Chris Connor of the Bird Rights SB Nation. That guy joins us today. Super, super involved with the Pelicans as a writer. He's been with SB Nation for 3 years now. Used to write for Pelican Debrief, my employer. Hoops Habit, fan-sided, I should say. But Chris has been covering the Pelicans for a long time. He's a NOLA native. Excellent, excellent, excellent stuff today. We make reference to those five options that I mentioned in terms of Pelicans, in terms of documentaries that could be shown about the Pelicans/Hornets. We talk about the future of what coaching will look like, whether it's Alvin Gentry or somebody else in the future of the Pelicans, when this team, this core, really makes the ascension to NBA championship level, whether it should be Gentry or not. And then we talk about biggest areas that need to be addressed for the offseason for the Pelicans. So ton of awesome, really in-depth stuff between myself and Chris today. So stick around, stick through the whole thing. Awesome, awesome stuff. Do not miss today's episode. Do not miss a second of it, Pelicans fans. Otherwise, you're going to be missing out on some incredible, incredible content. So here it is, my conversation with Chris Connor of the Bird Rights and SB Nation. So we're joined today by Chris Connor. Very excited for today's podcast with Chris. How you doing today, man?
Elliot, I am just fine. I got my mask. Well, my mask is next to me. My gloves are around me. I'm social distancing. I'm doing my best to follow all the rules and procedures, man.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot, especially with our guests on the podcast. Glad to hear that you're doing well. Glad to hear that you're staying safe and social distancing as much as you can. Hopefully all these protests and such don't get us back into craziness of being social, even though we shouldn't. I don't know if you've been paying attention to that at all, Chris, but yeah. You know, I just had a podcast, a couple guys that have interacted with the podcast a couple times threw a political question at me on one of the last polls, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna respond, but I'm gonna try to get as little political as possible. And right now, it's so difficult to not do that.
I got you, man. I definitely understand. You gotta kind of be careful. You know what I mean? You don't want to piss off any of your listeners, man. Right. By not responding, that's up either way, you know.
Exactly. So, this is not a political podcast, it's a Pelicans podcast. So therefore, Chris, if you listen, and those of you who have been listening, if you listen to this last podcast, which was one of my favorite podcasts that we've done so far on Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans, I outlined top five moments. Three were mine originally, and then you, the listener, added some that we discussed on this last podcast. But five moments in Pelicans / Hornets history that would be best for a documentary. And I shared those moments with you, the listener, and then with you, Chris, as well. We'll talk about those a little bit in a second. But Chris, did you have any that I did not list out that you thought of in terms of what would be best for a documentary, either through ESPN or Fox Sports New Orleans or just the Pelicans?
I think some future possibilities in regards to what could make a Pelicans documentary would probably be the way to go. I think, you know, you covered pretty much everything. And I think that there's one bullet point that's there that is, I mean, in my opinion, you know, it's arms and legs ahead of every of the other ones. So I think that there's enough there to, you know, to make a good debate of. But of course, you know, you have future possibilities that could happen, whether it's from Zion to, you know, whether it be just the team in total and what they turn into, how basketball is quote unquote saved in New Orleans, turned into a powerhouse. I mean, there's a bunch of different avenues you can go, but I think of what we have and what we know right now, you got to cover it, brother.
For sure. You know, what I tweeted out was those first three options, the 07-08 Hornets that went 56-26, the 17-18 team that did make it to the second round of the playoffs, and then the departures of Chris Paul and Anthony Davis, two clear best players in the Pelicans and Hornets history. My option, honestly, would probably be my first pick, I should say, in terms of a documentary, would be probably a combination of when the Pelicans or the Hornets at the time moved to Oklahoma City for a year because of Hurricane Katrina, and then came back to New Orleans and had the second best record in the West with that 56-26. And you know, it's easy to say options like the 2019 offseason if we're looking forward, like you had mentioned. But to me, in terms of Pelicans history, where we're at right now, I think a combination of those two would probably be the one that I would want to watch.
I'm with you. I mean, I think if you're trying to get like a national audience, I think the two that jump off the page to me are the CP3 and Anthony Davis departures, mainly because of the superstar power that exists there and the ways that they ended up leaving. Both are, I think, are totally different. But I think that if you really want to nail that one, maybe you have to tie that into a success story like Zion State, which is down the line and, you know, something that would have to take a life of its own. But I think something quick, something that people could immediately attach to, whether they're basketball fans or not, is the, you know, playing in Oklahoma City instead of New Orleans. I mean, you have so many different areas that are being touched with that story, from Chris Paul, of course, to the city of Oklahoma City, how they feel and they wrap their arms around the team, to how it helped them, bringing them into welcoming a whole new franchise in the Seattle Supersonics. You got the Hurricane Katrina influence. I mean, you got a bunch of different things to build off of. I don't know how long the documentary will be, but you for sure have enough there to make something really compelling and watchworthy.
I completely agree. And I mean, a lot of people, the generic NBA fan, that would probably be my age. You know, I was around 12 at the time. That would be the time that I was really, really investing myself into sports for the first time. People around my age and younger NBA fans might not even know that the Pelicans are, I keep saying the Pelicans, but it was the Hornets at the time, that the Hornets moved to Oklahoma City for a year. So that's got to be an opportunity to bring some people in. And that was clearly building the foundation for the Thunder to become an NBA franchise.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a strong argument that if Oklahoma City doesn't support the Pelicans or the Hornets at the time as they did, and you know, even now, you know, you can even, you know, you see how Chris Paul coming back to that city this season, and you know, kind of you know, surprising the NBA world with how the Thunder has been performing. You know, he's talked about how welcoming they were, how much it mattered to him, you know, something that he's never forgotten. You know, there's an argument that if that doesn't happen, I don't think that there's a way that Oklahoma City gets the Thunder or gets a team that has so much history and eventually became so powerful in the Western Conference like the Thunder.
And so quickly, too, with Kevin drafting three MVPs in the matter of a couple years and, you know, ultimately losing them, which will definitely, that, you know, that's definitely going to be a documentary at some point in time. You know, you had mentioned the CP3 and Anthony Davis departures. Those will probably be more of a nationwide thing that people know. They know what happened. And, you know, AD is obviously more of a recent thing. But CP3 really was that New Orleans Hornets team. You think about that era and you think about him, Peja Stojakovic, David West, and Tyson Chandler. And CP3 was so foundational to who the Hornets were at that point in time. Personally, I'd probably, you know, there's a little bit of animosity still among New Orleans between the fans and Anthony Davis, but I'd be extremely interested on what the franchise, what ESPN, what Fox Sports, whoever could do with in reference to the departure of Chris Paul.
Yeah, because you know, I don't think people talk about it in the same manner. Well, I don't think people remember how big it was at the time. You know, when Chris Paul's departure from New Orleans, I think it was overwhelmed by a trade that wasn't Chris Paul going to the Lakers, you know, for quote unquote basketball reasons and things that were going on with New Orleans in regards to ownership at the time. But yeah, man, I mean, that period going from where it seemed as if New Orleans, I mean, not only were they going to be they were going to be consistently a top team in the Western Conference. They had a superstar in their hands. I mean, it looked like they had a chance to be, in NBA Finals contention. But to go from that to losing Chris so quickly, I mean, in a matter of 2-3 years, you know, it just, looking back at it now, you know, I don't want to say it's unbelievable, but you forget number one, how big it was, how quickly it all transpired. And I mean, it's a message that, especially, you know, whether you're a small market team or you're a big market team, and you can make an argument that time period, those periods are only going to shrink with how fast things move, you know, years later in our world. But it's definitely a message to teams to, you know, I mean, you only have a certain amount of time to keep guys that become superstars happy and keep them wanting to be a part of your franchise moving forward. And, you know, that documentary has so many layers, from the time Chris Paul was drafted to some of his counterparts, teammates, and the LeBron angle, and the draft he was a part of, Mark Williams being drafted ahead of him, to how things around him broke down, from ownership to the front office to the players around him. And there's so many different layers, man. I mean, it would be an awesome doc. And like you said, whether it's ESPN or Fox Sports, whoever would put it together, you know, you have so much to choose from.
And I was just going to hit on that too. And it's so unfortunate in situations like that with the turbulence that he ran into, the not necessarily, I mean, you could categorize it as the animosity that was between him and the front office and ownership and such. But unfortunate, because New Orleans absolutely was in love with Chris Paul, and Chris Paul in love with New Orleans. So an unfortunate situation and a sad ending to what was an incredible, incredible few years that CP3 was in New Orleans, leading that team from being quite mediocre to the second seed in the NBA, in the Western Conference, behind Kobe's Lakers in that year that Kobe and Pau Gasol really resurrected the Lakers franchise. So like you said, so many layers, so many different ways you can go about a documentary that would be about Chris Paul leaving New Orleans. So to transition here, Chris writes for SB Nation. We talked about that a little bit about that in the intro. The website's called The Bird Writes. It's the section of SB Nation that covers the Pelicans. They do a lot of really, really good work there. A lot of really good work on Twitter for SB Nation. But in one of Chris's articles, and this will go back a few months into December, I'm not sure in terms of maybe other articles that you've written, if you'd want to talk about anything like that today, Chris. But this is the one that caught my eye, and I was 100% in on talking about this article. This article, you can check it out for yourself on The Bird Writes. The title is called "Writing on the Wall: New Orleans Pelicans Have Reached Point of No Return and Should Part Ways with Alvin Gentry." Need I mind you, this was written December 21st of this last year. So, Chris, have you changed your tune at all on Alvin Gentry? Or do you feel the same as you did December 21st?
So, you know, I'll say this. That article got me... I expected a lot more criticism than I actually received. I got a lot of people that actually reached out to me and said, "Man, no, I like what you did." I begrudgingly wrote that article. Alvin, from the times I've seen him at media day, to watching him at the practice, to knowing his history and the tough type of situations that he had to deal with in New Orleans last year, the complete circus that was the old Anthony Davis fiasco. Alvin's the guy that you want in your corner. You want in your foxhole. But does that guy make the best head coach, number one, for this type of team, this type of roster, future rosters that are created? Or Does that make the best head coach when you consider the aspirations of this team going forward? And, I mean, listen, goal, make no mistake about it, is championship contention. When you have a guy like Zion Williamson, some of the other pieces that have emerged around him, some that you knew beforehand and some that took a little bit of time to be introduced to. And that's not even mentioning, the future that they have with the cap flexibility and the veterans that they'll be able to entice, and the barrage of draft picks. So they're going to have an opportunity to really do some big things going forward. And the head coach that you choose needs to be the guy. You don't want a situation where you're switching things all over the place consistently, bringing in new coaches, new systems. You don't want to put your superstar and your high-quality players through that process, especially those guys that came from the Lakers that had to deal with changes by the minute, towards their heavyweight. But to answer your question, I think that it's hard to say. I can't stand on that horse and say he needs to go. They need to move right now. When I wrote that article, then it was they need to do it right now. Like, this is it. It can't get any worse. And I think you understand that, you got to go back to that time to kind of look at exactly, what the Pelicans were looking at. I mean, they were 7-23 after their loss. They were one game behind. One game ahead of the Golden State Warriors for the worst record in the Western Conference. Now, I understand they were banged up. I understand that, you know, that Zion wasn't that healthy yet. They had battled some injuries. Lonzo had missed some time here or there. Ingram had missed a little bit of time. Drew had missed time. Derek Favors, had his share of injuries. And outside of injuries, had a terrible loss of his mother. It was a lot to deal with at once. But when it's all said and done, the team had enough talent to be winning more games than they had. They should not have been on the losing streak that they had been on at the time, losing, you know, if I remember correctly, I don't remember exactly how many they had lost
13.
In a row, but it was,
13 games in a row.
There we go. 13 games in a row. They were not that bad of a team. And, you know, when you looked at their problems, you knew what it was, you know, the issues that they had defensively. But, you know, there were so many things that popped up. In that game, Lonzo Ball was before we got the full confident Lonzo that has emerged again, that finally hasn't been interrupted due to injury or distraction. Lonzo was still finding himself, and he was having to find himself coming off the bench, working himself back from an injury because, the offense, they were going through issues starting with Lonzo. He wasn't shooting the ball all that well. He wasn't decisive. He wasn't being quick with his moves offensively. He wasn't getting to the free throw line. But that game, he played really well. And Alvin Gentry has always stood by, if no matter what your quote-unquote role is on the team, you're playing well and you're helping us win a basketball game, you're going to have an opportunity to close that game. He's done it countless number of times. There's one reason Ian Clark was so important on that playoff team from a few years ago. Because Ian Clark was a guy who was signed on a minimum contract, but he had games in which he played well, in which Rajon Rondo, who people would know more about that has had a better NBA career, could be times in the fourth quarter, Rajon Rondo wouldn't play. But Ian Clark was better serving the team. And in that particular game, Lonzo Ball played really well. It looked like Pelicans were going to win. And fourth quarter comes, Lonzo plays a few minutes, and he doesn't close. Alvin instead went for Kenrich Williams. And Kenrich was in the middle of a shooting slump that was the worst of his career for a month. He just didn't make sense. They ended up losing the game. And at that point, it's like, man, you're not playing better defensively. You're turning the ball over a lot. Alvin is saying and preaching the same things every day about what they need to do. Take care of the basketball. They need to be more aware of things that's happening defensively. They need to move the basketball. All these things that are being said, it's not happening consistently on the floor. At that time, I felt as if it needed to happen then. If we're talking overall, we're talking about a long stretch. No, I don't believe Alvin Gentry is the coach for the future of New Orleans. I think that he lacks certain characteristics and things that a championship caliber coach is going to provide you, and these group of guys are going to need. Kudos to them for responding to him in the manner in which they have. They fought for him. Alvin says all the right things. He does all the right things. He's a player's coach, 100%, and he deserves a lot of credit for the turnaround that they've had as well. You can't take that away from him. He's been as much of involved in an improvement as the players have been and the injury luck. But if you're asking me long term, do I think Alvin is the guy to get you where you want to go? I don't think that he is. I think he's better served as more of a coordinator, more of a consultant. I think you need another guy with a certain level of experience and a certain type of system, scheme, method that's going to help this team, because we know they can score the basketball. They're going to need to defend, and they're going to need, I think, more structure to get where they want to go.
To throw in another point at which the series, or excuse me, the season, the point where the Pelicans were not playing well at all You mentioned in your article that they, I believe they were 21st in offense and probably lower in defense, given the way that the season has gone. They're currently, I believe, dead last. There it is. And they're currently 18th in defense. So that doesn't surprise me. It's like in a completely different team. And to throw another point in there as to why the team was not playing so well is that 90% of the roster hadn't really played together prior to this season. I mean, you got Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, and Lonzo, and then you got Etuan and guys like Kenrich and I mean, Zylan Cheatham, who's been around a little while, but it's just a big conglomeration of a bunch of guys who were not on the same team the year prior. So, I mean, this even happened with the 2011 Miami Heat when they had LeBron, Chris Bosh, D-Wade, who they started the season 9-8, which is very different than 7-23. But it does take a little while to get used to everybody's game. And you had mentioned they didn't have Zion. And I honestly thought throwing Zion in the mix of it all when the team had turned around would throw things off, and all it did was make the team better, which I was not necessarily extremely wrong, but I was pretty wrong in that situation. And you know, given the way Zion plays, I think it was fair to make an assumption that it would affect the team in a negative way, at least initially. But I was very wrong, and I'm very happy to have been wrong. But I had said on one of our more recent podcasts with Jordan Moore of Fox Sports Boston, we were talking about Alvin Gentry, and he had asked me what my thoughts were about the future of Gentry in New Orleans. And given the way the team played the last 2-3 months of the season, at least in the immediate future, I don't see any reason to move off Gentry. Lonzo is absolutely perfect for a Gentry system. He was an associate head coach with the Golden State Warriors in 2014-2015. He was head coach with the Phoenix Suns for a little while. They had some success. He hasn't had a ton of success as a head coach. That's very clearly established. Like you said, he doesn't necessarily have that championship pedigree like you would want for a team that has the bright future like the Pelicans do. But personally, I'd like to hear what you think on this. I don't think the Pelicans should move on from Gentry unless he gives them a reason to. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, so listen, right? Like, and I even put it in the article, and I got some flack about it, but I don't give a damn when it comes to this subject. Like, the last thing I want to do, being an African American, is fire an African American coach in the city in which I love playing. You know, one of the best sports that you know the world has known to man. You know, that's I don't want to. I'm not an Alvin hater. You know, I'm not someone that you know they just want to see him fired by any means, right? I think now, to answer your question, you absolutely have to. You can't let him go unless he gives you a reason to. Yeah, I mean that's correct. So, but I guess my question is, you know, what type of reason are you going to look at? What reason is going to present itself? Because it can go two ways, right? You can wait too long where players start to mature and they start to get frustrated with the lapses and the inconsistencies that, you know, they come with an offense, like Alvin Gentry, that is freelance, that doesn't have a whole bunch of structure, that is up and down. It's all about pace, no matter what. That's going to give you defensive lapses. There's going to be possession, but you're just tired. You don't feel like playing defense because the goal is, regardless of shot, whether you make a shot or miss a shot, the goal is to get that ball inbound and get it back up the court. Right? You know, things can hit a wall in which ultimatums are made. And that's the last thing that you want from your players in a small market, in a situation where you're trying to completely change this narrative about superstars not wanting to play in New Orleans because of what happened with Chris Paul and Anthony Davis. Even if you go back to Baron Davis, you know, that's one aspect. The other side is, look at Monty Williams. Monty Williams ended up in Anthony Davis's first playoff appearance with New Orleans. Monty Williams went 45-37. No one predicted that team to make the playoffs that year. They ended up they needed help and they needed, you know, Kevin Durant injury, and a hell of a shot by Anthony Davis in regards to a tiebreaker. So if I'm correct, I think they ended up sweeping Oklahoma City that year. But they needed some help from that perspective to get in. But Monty did he overachieved that year. And it wasn't like we're talking about a roster that was, while it was talented, you know, it wasn't a whole bunch of chemistry. Similar to teams we see now with New Orleans, in which guys have been hurt and you haven't had an opportunity to see the full conglomerate of players together night in and night out. And Monty was fired because New Orleans and Dell Demps, Tom Benson wanted a winner, and that team had to find a way to upgrade, if you will. And Alvin Gentry was supposed to be that upgrade over Monty. You know, if it works, okay, you know, great. If it doesn't work, you got a chance to piss people off. I mean, I guess it's which route it is, and at what point do you identify exactly when it's time to make a move and make a decision for another head coach?
That is an absolutely fair question. You know, I think, you know, my first thought in a situation like this is to reference David Blatt versus Tyronn Lue. David Blatt was clearly not the man for that job in Cleveland. Sure, he has had success in overseas leagues, but he was not the man to coach LeBron James. And where we could get with this evolution, this ascension of the Pelicans to back to relevancy, which is, I mean, they're basically there, but more towards championship relevancy, I should say, is a point where, you know, this roster's probably not going to stick together for another however many years. Things are going to change. So guys are going to want to get paid, stuff like that. That's just typical NBA, whether it's in New Orleans or Los Angeles or Boston or where, what have you. But there's going to come a situation where things are going to change and Alvin could refuse to change the way he coaches, change the system to fit the players. And that would be a situation where probably he and guys like Zion, and you know, Zion's a great kid, incredibly humble, and but he's not seasoned. And he's going to get to a point where he will be so far ahead in terms of basketball intelligence that if a situation like that were to come to fruition, he and Alvin are probably going to butt heads. In a situation like that, that's what I'm leaning towards when I say Alvin has to give you a reason to fire him for the Pelicans to move on. Does that make sense?
Well, no, it does. It does. It does. I mean, my thing was timing. Regardless, and that's why that article was written at that time. It was like the writing's on the wall, because if you're going to do it, this is the perfect time to do it, right? You kind of know what Alvin is. This may be the feeling, or you have an idea of what his feeling is and what his strengths and weaknesses are. And when you look at championship coaches and you break down Alvin Gentry characteristic by characteristic, I don't think he has some of those strengths that you are going to need to outmatch and outwit some of the better coaches that are going to help lead and motivate teams into deep playoff runs. But now I see you, David Blatt and Tyronn Lue, and I'll raise you, I don't know how far you go back, but Dale Harris and Phil Jackson. That's what I see more of. Because when you look at David Blatt and Tyronn Lue, like, you know, Tyronn Lue, like, that was LeBron's guy, right? And that team wasn't necessarily a young team either. They weren't in that Oklahoma City, where Oklahoma City was right around the time. Because I think, you know, when you look at New Orleans, I think from a team perspective, it's easy to look at Oklahoma City and say, all right, well, you may have a bunch of young stars that all grow together that could explode 1 year and hopefully beyond into a championship run. But they're not even at that stage yet to where they're young. They're young veterans, right? You know, I mean, you have a bunch of, you have a team, I think, that if you take out, I think they're like eighth or ninth in the NBA in regards to youth. And that's not including, you know, some of the injured players, Darius Miller, so on and so forth. And I think with that Cleveland team, like, that team was built to win right away. But this team in New Orleans, everyone knows it's going to take some time. So the reason I bring up Dale Harris and Phil Jackson is because that Lakers team with Kobe and Shaq, so on and so forth, Dale had a few times to fail in the playoffs repeatedly, but they kept running into a wall before the organization said, okay, we have to bring somebody with a championship pedigree. Dale's a good coach, but he's not great enough to lift us over the hump where we know we should be able, where we know our talent speaks to us to be able to represent, right? And that's where Phil comes in, and he takes that talent, he takes what's left, but he's seen fail, and he molds it into, you know, a three-peat and one of the best runs and most fun dominant runs that we've seen in recent memory. So, you know, I would look at it from that perspective, watching a young team with maybe a veteran or two kind of grow, a young superstar in general, in Kobe Bryant, kind of grow, and then watching the next coach and after a few playoff exits or bouncing. Now, I guess the times are different now than they were then. We weren't as worried at that time of a star, you know, leaving by year six or year seven or, you know, planning his way out. And, I mean, there's also a market difference as well. But regardless, I mean, I would see it happening more so that way, maybe 2 years, I would say around 2 or 3 years of playoff failures. Of course it happens in the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, then you have a spot, I would say, you know, because going into next season, no matter what happens with the rest of this one, once next season, people are going to be penciling New Orleans into a playoff seat. No matter how well Golden State comes back, no matter what they add to their team, people are going to be expecting New Orleans to at least secure one playoff spot. Whether 8-7, whatever it is, people are going to be expecting to at least make it.
And in reference to next year, should the Pels start off slow again, that's not going to cut it. This year, patience was a virtue because you had such a young squad. You had such a team, not of misfits, but of guys that had not played together. You didn't have Zion. So patience was key, and patience has been key in Zion's return too, in terms of minutes restriction, so he stays healthy. And a slow start like that will not cut it. That'd be a huge reason to move on from Gentry. And if the team moves on next year doesn't make the playoffs, then it's time to fire Gentry. And I'll throw this situation at you as well. As the Warriors started to really become and start to ascend to championship relevancy, they lost in that first round matchup with the Clippers in 2014, I want to say. It was the year before they won their first championship. Mark Jackson was fired. And Steph was upset about it, and rightfully so. The team was playing well. They just happened to lose to a team that had more veterans and was a good basketball team by all accounts that year. Chris Paul, Lob City, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, etc. And the Warriors made the decision to hire Steve Kerr. And if the Pels run into a situation next year where, let's say, they get the fourth, fifth, sixth seed, don't move past the first round, yeah, in the scheme of things, that's success, I guess, in terms of the Pelicans' history, just because it's been pretty mediocre. But with the roster that has been assembled, you're expecting more. So therefore, a situation like that would be, it would be comparable to what could happen for the Pelicans' future.
Correct. 100%. That is another parallel that comes to mind when you think of this coaching situation. But again, I mean, it's gonna fall on. Golden State made the right. They pushed all the right buttons. So many things fell in their lap, right? You know, due to the dysfunction of other franchises and them doing their work and due diligence and putting in just overall roster construction. You know, but it takes. You know, you go from Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr. Number one, I mean, they're both quote unquote player coaches, and I think some people kind of confused what a player's coach means. Doesn't always mean that that a player's coach is the nicest guy in the world. But a lot of times it has to do with the fact that, you know, that coach gets the player's respect off of the minute that they're brought in, just based off the fact that, you know, they've played in the league, they've done something worth noting, and those players feel like they can relate to that coach. It's hard to do what Golden State did. They went from one player that had a hell of a career to another player that, when it's all said and done, you're talking about championships and, you know, from a shooting perspective, had a hell of a career. Steve Kerr, it wasn't like Steve hadn't had a coaching background of much. I mean, outside of some time that he spent under Popovich as a player and some of the things he went through there as a general manager before that. It didn't keep him there long enough in Phoenix. When it's all said and done, that was a hell of a jump, a hell of a leap, you know, to make. And it's a risk, a gamble of sorts, you know, to go with someone who's constantly, who's more militant, like marketing someone who's totally laid back. That paid off for him. The Pelicans and David Griffin and company have to make a similar decision. You just got to hope that they make the right one.
Yeah. First of all, if there's anybody that I trust in the NBA as far as a front office member to make a decision like that, it is David Griffin. I'm a huge, huge David Griffin guy, obviously, as a Pelicans fan, as a Pelicans member of the media. But now here's the question is, who would be that coach that the Pels could and should move on to, at least in your mind's eye, Chris?
Man, if it can work with Alvin Gentry, I hope it can. I don't want it to make it seem like we're already writing history and getting them out. So I don't want to do that. But I have an opinion on what personally I think would the best team, and I think that's okay, right? So I look at a guy like Jerry Stackhouse. I look at a guy like Sam Cassell. But Jerry Stackhouse is my personal favorite. In fact, he was one of the people that I was very high on when they were, when New Orleans were looking for, was to figure out what they were going to do with the GM position, whether it was going to be Danny Ferry, before we knew the Pelicans even had a chance with David Griffin. Because it was assumed by most that Danny Ferry was going to be the one to return and take over that that majority general manager role. But Jerry Stackhouse is the guy I look at, man. You know, I think when you are a small market team, you got to be really calculated with the moves that you make. You got to pick the right forces, and you need to take the ball your way, but you got to get through those first 6 or 7 years, and you got to make sure that you're making decisions that are valid. Guys that know basketball, guys, if they play the game perfectly, but guys, you know, guys that know the game, player, you know, someone that has some level of success, and somebody that your players aren't gonna turn their nose up to when he walks in. And I think Jerry Stackhouse is one of those guys. You're talking about a dude that, you know, take it for what you will, but, you know, won a G League championship a couple of years ago, which had on a roster that had Fred VanVleet on it, by the way. over there for Toronto's G League affiliate, which I think isn't talked about enough, and for a guy that hadn't had much head coach experience. So I don't think he had any head coach experience at any level at that time. Jerry Stackhouse is an all-star NBA or former all-star NBA player. He played on a bunch of different teams in a bunch of different situations. He has a parallel with Brandon Ingram because they're from the same city, and that's somebody that D.I. will look at immediately. You know, and I mean, Brandon's an easygoing guy as is. You know, I mean, he's a hard worker. He's going to listen. He's going to listen to what his coaches are asking from him. But it helps that if the guy you bring in just so happens to be someone that's from your city that can relate to you even more. Now, you know, of course, we know how tight, you know, we know Zion is Jordan Brand. You know, whenever he's some type of issue, you know, with the comments that Stackhouse made recently about his time playing with Jordan Washington, that's a different story. But I think when you look at and now Jerry, of course, he's been at Vanderbilt, you know, handling things there. Is Jerry necessarily does he speak for somebody that you know is going to win you a championship? I'm not sure, but I can say that from everything that I've read and everything that I've seen and knowing what things have said, what people have said about Jerry, that he's going to hold guys, that he's going to hold guys accountable. I don't care what level you win a championship at, you know, that gives a meaning to somebody that has an ability to adjust, to hold folks accountable, hold his or herself accountable. The ability to make the best of what you're given, even if it goes against what your natural system wants or beliefs are, the ability to get through adversity, all those things are going to speak well on his resume. If I had to pick, and so far Jerry's also been a guy who, as much as he's poured offensively, he believes in defense. And I think this team is going to need somebody, not just a defensive coordinator, they need their head coach to be the first person. And I'm not saying Alvin doesn't preach, because he talks about it all the time. But I think it needs to be higher on the pecking order, because they're going to score 100 points tonight, 115, 20 points a night in their sleep. So that's happening.
You know who else won an NBA G League title as a coach?
Uh-oh, who?
Nick Nurse.
Nick Nurse. Nurse, and we love Nick Nurse. Nick Nurse is fantastic. From the hair to the championships with the, you know, the things are. Also, what you read about him and what he's done with that team in Toronto with this season, Nick Nurse is fantastic.
And another quick fact for you, Nick Nurse went to the same college that I did, University of Northern Iowa, played basketball there for the Panthers. So got to rep my school while we're doing that as well.
I'm going to get Nick Nurse on the podcast, baby.
Yeah, yeah. Got to do that. One of my friends, actually. One of my friends actually was on a radio show in Cedar Falls and got to interview Nick Nurse. So maybe I can work that in. But appreciate the suggestion there, Chris. One last thing before we let you go, because we are hitting pretty big time here on Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans. But you got to do that when you got such a high caliber guest. So Chris, we've talked about some different things here on the podcast. What the plan is with different free agents, how the Pelicans should go forward in terms of the draft, who they should bring back this offseason. What are your thoughts in terms of biggest priorities for the Pelicans this year, 2020, this offseason?
So I think if you look at the amount of assets that they've acquired, if you look at David Griffin, you can kind of see he'll give you hints and ideas of what he's trying to do. You know, New Orleans had a certain amount of draft picks. Yeah, you know what? This fourth pick isn't going to cut it. Let me get two picks instead. Let me trade down. Let me make a trade. Let me get some extra kicks here, right? And he was able to do that. I think he was, but he got 10 and 17 from Atlanta. Right, to go with Zion Williamson. Okay, now you know you have that. They have a barrage of second round picks in which they acquired. Now, the Los Angeles Lakers trade. Got a bunch of different picks and pick swaps and, you know, protected picks and, you know, all different types of situations that eventually are going to have, going to land L.A. in hell. You know, but, you know, you do what you got to do to try to win that championship early. Or at all, if you can, for the King and Anthony Davis there, of course, now. But, yeah, I mean, you know, when you pay attention to that, I mean, I think the goal long-term is to trade for a disgruntled superstar, an established superstar that fits the growth of Lonzo Ball, Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, whoever, you know, whoever emerges with them, if Nikhil Alexander Walker takes a step, you know, or if it's Jackson Hayes, so on and so forth, you know, you're going to want a guy that fits that mold and that can help this team become even more of a problem in the Western Conference. So if that's the right decision, I think in regards to draft picks, I think that no matter what you have to do, you want to pick attractive pieces that have high potential. And they're at a spot right now to where they can kind of pick the best player available, because due to what their favorite AJ Redick did, which I've never seen, well, I haven't seen very often many free agents do, even of their elk, without being overpaid or without, you know, having an all-time player. KJ Redick and Derek Favors both requested to come to New Orleans. It doesn't happen, man. A guy like KJ Redick, what do they do? They want to go and play with LeBron. They want to go have an opportunity to where they know they're going to be playing in June, right? But they're going to go and play for Golden State or something like that. So KJ Redick on his, when he had a bunch of other ways he could have went back to school, he could have waited off the market a little bit, taken a pay cut from going another direction. He could have taken Danny Green's or the money that Los Angeles gave Danny Green and been a Laker. You know, eventually, Derek Favors could have won a bunch of different areas. He decided, you know, I would like to go to New Orleans. It doesn't happen very often. You know, soon after, you know, a trade, you know, ended up being facilitated. So I think they'll be able to recruit veterans. They're a fun young team. They still have Jrue Holiday. They still have JJ for another year, and I think that they're going to work something out with Derek Favors, even if this is for a short term. So they have a good mix of veterans and youth and guys and young veterans that have been in the league 3, 4 years, 5 years, so on and so forth, that you don't really find very often. You only see teams like what Toronto has been doing as of late, or San Antonio, and teams like those have built over time. I think if we're talking me per se, I'm looking more so from either the trade market or free agency. I don't think they make a big move in regards to get a superstar. And every, you know, everyone's been slobbering over Bradley Beal the past year and a half, which isn't necessarily my pick per se. You have to figure out what their goal is for Jrue Holiday go long term. You know, there's been a lot of talk about will they trade him, won't they, you know, will they not trade him, will they keep him? If they trade him, that can kind of change the direction on where they go with certain aspects. But let's just, for the sake of things, say that they keep the pieces that they have now for the most part. Let's say they they bring back Derek Favors for a short term deal and they don't trade JJ Redick and Jrue Holiday and for at least another year. I think at that point, I think they need, it's ironic, but they need a stretch five that can offer some sort of defense, whether it be, you know, at the rim, just the ability to switch and move on the floor, but someone who can knock down a three-point shot consistently. Elliot, can you tell me the center that would have probably fit that role perfectly? They wouldn't have even had to go and pay money for it.
I didn't quite hear the question that you asked, but if you want to run it back really quick.
No worries. That's it. I said, can you tell me the stretch five center that can defend a little bit, that can not, you know, but they can knock down a 3-point shot that New Orleans could have had that they wouldn't have had to go out and pay money for?
my first thought, I'm not super.
Okay, no pressure.
My first thought is Brooke Lopez.
No, Christian no. Wood. Christian goddamn Wood. He was the one. He is the absolute perfect piece for what the team has needed over time this season and what they're going to need going forward. I think next to Zion, next to Brandon Ingram, Lonzo, all those guys in public. He was perfect. He would have been perfect. Things didn't work out. Due to the Nicola Melli signing, drafting Jackson Hayes, and being able to get Zion, and the whole new infrastructure that didn't sign Christian Wood on a future deal, on a 10-day deal, or later for the rest of the year, that had priorities and other directions. This is understandable. Now Christian is more likely going to be out of New Orleans, salary wants in regards to spending. And if you have Derek Favors, you're not going to want to overpay for a backup center. But I think when it's all said and done, I think a stretch five, whether you go through the trade market or you decide to, you go and pick up a veteran free agent, a stretch five that has some sort of rim protection ability. You mentioned Brook Lopez. He would be the perfect guy, but unfortunately, he's locked into a long-term deal with Milwaukee. But you look at some of the bigs that Milwaukee is putting next to Giannis, I think that's the perfect type of guy you would want there. And outside of that, I think you need another 3-4 tweener, wing / power forward guy that can also stretch the floor. I mean, to me, if Kenrich Williams with a jump shot, if he was able to knock down even essentially the short corner three consistently, if he was able to fulfill my hopes of P.J. Tucker, which I thought he was going to go into. I think you got it. You do it. Because you're going to need that flexibility next to Zion when eventually, no matter how bad Zion has been defensively, you are going to still see small ball five lineups with him. It's just going to happen. Nicola Melli has been wonderful out of that power four position and running the five, especially after the All-Star break. But I think that if you can get someone that is a little bit better defensively and possesses better lateral quickness than Nicola Melli has, I think you'd be better served, whether it be at the five or you add a 3-4. And I would also throw in a veteran point guard in that spot as well. Folks were high on the Killers and the Walker, but I think he's more of a combo guard, probably more of a two than he is a point guard. At least early on. And I think if something were to happen to Lonzo and to keep Drew Holiday from reluctantly running the front guard position, it might serve you best to go out and get somebody maybe of the mold of like a George Hill, who's been in the league for a while, who can knock down the shot, will willingly defend, but it isn't going to take up the ball or shot, so on and so forth. And that will get other guys involved.
I like that. You hit every single possible need that the Pelicans have this offseason, especially in terms of the draft. I'm not sure if you've done a ton of evaluation of guys watching tape or anything like that for this year's NBA draft, but they're really... there's such a variety of, and there's absolutely no consensus for those who are doing evaluations. There's no consensus as to who's going to go where, not even really in the top five or top three even. I'm with you. I think chances are, you're going to get one or the other, finding that combination. Devin Vassell is probably the best option for this year's NBA draft. If you want to get a guy who can defend a lot of positions and then also spread the floor. Main thing, those are the two things that the Pels need this offseason. Defense, as they currently rank 18th in defense in the NBA, and of course guys who can spread the floor for Zion and for Derek Favors to do work.
No, I mean, you know it right on the head, man. I think when you look at the age radius of the guys of the most important core pieces right now, just so many guys that are under the age of 25 that are going to be crucial to your future. But they aren't guys that are gonna need a whole bunch of development going forward. Like Zion doesn't need drastic development. Now that Brandon Ingram has kind of, you know, has broken out and is playing the best basketball of his career, he doesn't need drastic development. You know what Josh Hart is. And Lonzo Ball, now that he is, has become a, you know, a hell of a shooter, as we worked the shot, shout out to Fred Benson. You know,
damn right.
Yeah. You know, and we also know what Lonzo can bring defensively. Same thing. You know what he is. You don't need drastic development there anymore outside of his free throw shot. And if I forgot anybody, Jackson Hayes is someone that needs in my opinion, is going to need some drastic help in regards to his IQ, awareness, his feel for the game, his tendencies, fouling, so on and so forth. No. Fundamental work, but I don't count him in that core of players that I'm talking about. I don't think you're in a spot in which you need to have to gather another young talent unless they are willing to make a difference right away. Maybe a 3-year guy, a 4-year guy, but someone. If you do end up drafting somebody that you have plans for, and now New Orleans are doing things like they did with snatching. Stashing Didi overseas, and we'll see what he ends up turning into down the line. But David Griffin has his team thinking, has the organization, has his fans thinking outside the realms, outside the box of what they're used to. You know, we're going to build this team in so many ways. It's not just going to be the prototypical way. And I think that one thing to keep an eye on is what if. If they do bring in a young talent, what are their plans for that young talent going forward? You know, because the season ends right now in the lottery. What happens if they luck up and, you know, they strike gold twice and they end up with another top 5 pick or number 1? I mean, what happens then at that point? Do you trade it? I think you probably do. I think at this point they have their young group in which they need to train, help, work on. From a chemistry perspective, from a skill perspective, they have it there. And it's rare that you get that on a team that can possibly make the playoffs, right? They've been able to recruit veterans. Now you continue to go that route. But if you do draft somebody, it's someone who is almost a finished project. That's someone you have to spend a bunch of time in regards to untapping potential. Somebody who can come in right away who's ready to step on an NBA floor and, produce for you right away and do it in a way that doesn't interrupt your current nucleus of players that you already have that should have high ceiling.
There you have it, Pels fans. Pretty sure Chris and I could talk Pelicans for more than 24 hours if we really wanted to, but we're going to wrap it up.
I've been too.
Yeah, yeah. We've been hammering it out. This will be our longest podcast so far, I believe, in the New Orleans Pelicans, and very happy to have done so. Chris, coming from SB Nation, the bird writes, the guy clearly knows what he's talking about. Some really awesome, awesome stuff today on this podcast. Chris, thanks so much for joining us. I can tell you right now, you will definitely be on this podcast again, should you want to join.
Well, I mean, at least I know next time I got to make sure that I do it when I'm off work. I don't have anything pressing to do, because we talked about trimming this thing to where we can go long, and an hour later, here we are, man.
Yeah.
But it was a pleasure being on, man. I can talk sports with the people that are in the team day, man, any day. So I appreciate the opportunity. I'll come on anytime.
It was a blast. Thanks so much, Chris.
Anytime, man.
So there you have it, Pels fans. Again, excellent, excellent, excellent stuff today on Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans. We were joined by Chris Connor of SB Nation and The Bird Writes. If you missed any part of this episode, if you tuned out, if you zoned out, which who would ever do such a thing during Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans? But if you did, definitely go back and take a listen. And if you missed yesterday's podcast, make sure you check that out as well. Five moments that deserve a documentary in the history of the New Orleans Pelicans / Hornets. All right, Pels fans, you know the drill. Go follow me on Twitter if you haven't done so. You're going to be getting a ton of Pelicans content there, whether it's reminders to go listen to the podcast, links for the podcast, my opinions, my thoughts on the Pelicans right now, going forward, or even in the past. And not just my opinions, but opinions of guys like Chris, your very own opinions. If I ever tweet anything remotely relevant to the Pelicans, your opinions are welcome. They will be retweeted because, like I've said a million times, we are about you and only you here on A Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans. And you might be wondering what my handle is on Twitter. It is just Elliot Clough. It's right there in front of you. You open the screen, it's going to be spelled out directly in front of your face. It's ELIOTCLOUGH. And even if you just hashtag what the Pell is up, you're going to be engaging with me one way or another. And while you're here, subscribe, leave a rate and review.
Do it!
Especially if you are on Apple Podcasts, that really helps out the pod for us to get bigger, move forward, and to get different guests, different topics, different ways of engaging with you on every single form of social media, every single social media platform. And if and when you head over to those social media platforms, go follow Believe Sports if you're on Instagram, but Believe on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And you can check out a plethora of their other podcasts on Believe.com, or just head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you're listening to this podcast right here. I've got another article coming at you on FanSided's Hoops Habit page on the Pelicans later this week. So check that out. Stay tuned. I also have some pretty big news coming for you. Some very, very exciting stuff from Believe in New Orleans Pelicans. You do not want to miss this at all. Very, very, very excited. Do not forget to give me that follow on Twitter because I want to hear from you. I want to retweet your stuff. I want to share your thoughts, not only on Twitter, but on this podcast. We name you, we address you by name here on Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans. We are on a first name basis because otherwise, what are you engaging for? We want to hear from you. We want to share your thoughts and opinions on Twitter, on any other platform that you share those opinions, and then of course here on the podcast. If there's something you don't like, leave a review, let me know, even just at me on Twitter for there as well. I am open to any and all forms of criticism, and of course you can always hashtag what the Pell is up to get me up, get my attention there on Twitter. And there you have it, Pells fans. Amazing stuff from Chris Connor today. Definitely one of my favorite podcasts so far. If you didn't catch any part of this, if you had to turn volume down, go back. Go back and take a listen. And for Chris Connor, the Believe Network, and myself, I am Elliot Clough, and this was Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.